Hi, I'm Renee Freitas Donahue with the Talking Information Center's Dirty Laundry, the June 15, 2026 edition of the National Enquirer. JonBenet Ramsey case rocked by another death. The investigation into the brutal murder of child beauty queen JonBenet Ramsey has taken another shocking turn with the death of the family housekeeper, who was once named a person of interest in the case that has gripped America's attention for nearly 30 years. Linda Hoffman Pugh, who died May 2nd at the age of 82, was working for the Ramseys when 6-year-old JonBenet was found dead in their Boulder, Colorado home the day after Christmas in 1996. At press time, Hoffman Pugh's cause of death was still a mystery. In the aftermath of the Tykes killing, Hoffman Pugh reportedly claimed that Patsy Ramsey, the child's mother, had named her as a possible suspect. But Dad John Ramsey tells the National Enquirer that his late wife knew Hoffman Pugh well, and Patsy said early on that if Linda was involved, she would never hurt JonBenet. The housekeeper was eventually cleared by authorities, but sued Patsy and John over claims in their book, The Death of Innocence, The Untold Story of JonBenet's Murder and How Its Exploitation Compromised the Pursuit of the Truth, that she may have played a role in JonBenet's death. A federal court dismissed the suit, and the decision was upheld on appeal. Hoffman Pugh joins a growing list of witnesses, investigators, and persons of interest who have died since the pageant princess was snatched from her bed on Christmas Day, sexually abused, then bludgeoned and garroted. Among the dead are famed forensic pathologist Dr. Henry Lee, who hunted for DNA evidence during the early stages of the still unsolved murder and died in March at age 87. And Patsy, who died of ovarian cancer at 49 in 2006. Retired Detective Lou Smit, who was hired by John to investigate his daughter's heartbreaking case, died in 2010. And Bill McReynolds, a close family friend and person of interest, who was never charged, passed in 2002. Last year, Tom Haney Jr., the hard-boiled Denver Police Department detective brought in to interrogate and unsuccessfully elicit a confession from Patsy, died suddenly in August at age 77. In 2024, a neighbor who reportedly heard JonBenet's blood-curdling death scream passed away at age 77. These people are dying, and justice is just fading away, an expert JonBenet investigator tells the Enquirer. With all these witnesses dying, they are going to have a tough time prosecuting this case if and when they make an arrest. As the Enquirer previously reported, before his death, Smit compiled the names of dozens of suspects in a spreadsheet, which he said included approximately a half dozen priority one suspects. One was David Cooper, the alias of a man who contacted John 20 years ago and claimed to be a professional killer hired by one of his disgruntled ex-employees. The police had no interest in looking at him, John, now 82, told the Enquirer in December of 2024. The grieving father remains frustrated over the lack of progress by blundering lawmen who have failed to solve the murder, and expressed hope that testing of DNA samples taken at the crime scene could crack the case, especially if investigators employ forensic genetic genealogy, FGG. We have been pressing the police very hard to employ FGG, using the male DNA recovered from various clothing items worn by JonBenet the night she was murdered, John tells the Enquirer. FGG is a new, very powerful tool, and if used by the Boulder police, I believe we would have a very good chance of identifying the killer. John has vowed, "I won't give up pressing the authorities to do their job until I see that they do their job." And to the killer, he says, "We will find you." The Boulder Police Department has assigned a fresh pair of eyes to the case, former Alabama Deputy Sheriff and Patrol Officer Kenny Beck, a development that some experts believe may help solve the murder. Renowned gumshoe Jason K. Jensen and investigator Michael Vail, author of the upcoming book, I Know Who Killed JonBenet, My 29-Year Journey for Justice, have met with Beck several times to discuss the case and believe he's the real McCoy. Sources say they're ready to nail 7 new suspects. Jensen hopes Beck uses AI technology to comb through 1 million pages of documents from 40,000 reports, 1,000 interviews across 17 states and 2 foreign countries, 2,500 pieces of evidence, and thousands of tips. New eyes mean new perspective, and I applaud the new detective the Boulder police have assigned, Jensen tells the Inquirer. He is really on the case. Cavett facing final curtain. Late-night trailblazer Dick Cavett's skeletal figure and bewildered appearance following the final episode of The Late Show has triggered fears that the once sharp-witted funny man is sadly heading for his final sign-off, sources say. As this image shows, the 89-year-old retired talk show host, who once offered a brainy alternative to Johnny Carson's Tonight Show during the early 1970s, appeared lost and tragically physically diminished on the streets of New York City. The head-turning photo of Cavett was taken May 21st, only hours after Late Show host Stephen Colbert's final episode, and as the Ivy League-educated intellectual arrived at an after-party. Cavett, who has been candid about his battle with depression and undergoing electroconvulsive therapy treatments, is only about 6 years removed from a devastating stroke that left him reliant on a walker to get around, a health crisis he described as a wicked, wicked thing. I don't feel permanently, dramatically scarred or wounded by it, he said last year. A lot of people cannot say that. But after seeing recent photos of Cavett, one doctor tells the National Enquirer that he never would have expected the star to look so frail, even at the very senior age of 89. Sometimes people who have strokes suffer lingering bouts of depression and they don't eat enough, and as we know, Cavett has a long history of depressive disorder, says Dr. Stuart Fisher, who has not treated the star. The thing you really have to worry about with stroke victims is balance, he notes. They are particularly susceptible to falls, head injuries, and hip fractures. Also, a stroke can be a sign of underlying heart disease. About 10% of strokes are caused by rhythmic disturbances of the heart. Brittany Brand's mom, a murderer. Blabbermouth Britney Spears griped to the California cops who collared her for suspected DUI in March that her mother Lynn got off scot-free after having killed a man, according to police footage. After one of the officers tells the seemingly tipsy toxic singer, 44, that it is extremely dangerous to drive under the influence of alcohol or drugs or both, she responds, "Yes, sir, I know. My mom actually killed a man on a bike, but I never did that before," the video shows. In the clip, Britney further bellyaches, "And nothing happened to her. Why didn't they arrest her? How come my mom got away with everything?" In Lynn's 2008 memoir, Through the Storm, she recounts a fatal traffic incident in 1975 in which she accidentally hit and killed Anthony Winter, 12, while bringing her brother to a hospital in Kentwood, Louisiana. "The roads were slick with rain, and I was rounding the curve. An oncoming car was coming in the left lane," Lynn writes. Brittany's mom, who was never charged, further recounts, "In a split second, I could see 2 young boys riding their bikes on the road. In that flash of time, I had a sick sensation that I would hit one of them, that it would be impossible not to, as I knew my car would not stop, no matter how hard I slammed on the brakes. One boy managed to get his bike out of the way, but his friend, a 12-year-old whose house was right on the scene of the accident, was hit." In the police video, Brittany also alleges that Lynn tried to kill her. As the National Enquirer previously reported, Brittany was busted on March 4th in Ventura County after someone called 911 to report an erratic driver. The Songbird was the car's sole occupant and reportedly failed a field sobriety test. The arrest footage appears to show Brittany bragging, "I could probably drink 4 bottles of wine and take care of you. I am an angel." The hitmaker ultimately pleaded guilty to violating the state's wet, reckless law and was sentenced to 12 months of probation. She was also ordered to complete a DUI class and pay state-mandated fines. In a statement issued on May 4th, Michael A. Goldstein, Spears' attorney, who appeared in court on her behalf, said, "Through her plea today, Brittany has accepted responsibility for her conduct." No friend of Matthew's. Troubled Matthew Perry depended on assistant Kenneth Iwamasa to keep him sober, but the late actor's still grieving family claims his confidant of 25 years ultimately delivered the fatal blow in a decades-long battle with drug and alcohol addiction. Prosecutors found that the fallen friend died of acute effects of ketamine or accidental overdose after Iwamasa repeatedly injected him with a hallucinogenic anesthetic in 2023. Roughly a year later, the live-in helper pleaded guilty to conspiracy to distribute ketamine causing death, and on May 27th, he was sentenced to 41 months in prison. He was also ordered to serve 2 years of supervised release and pay a $10,000 fine. Perry's mother and sisters laid bare the devastating depths of Iwamasa's betrayal in a series of victim impact statements. "Matthew trusted Kenny. We trusted Kenny," recalls mom Suzanne Morrison. "Kenny's most important job by far was to be my son's companion and guardian in his fight against addiction. His number one responsibility, ensure that Matthew remained what he wanted to be, drug-free. Instead, she alleges he killed her eldest child and made the suffering worse by pretending to be the good guy who tried to save Matthew. He sent me songs, he drew a little map to help me find my way around the cemetery," recalls the 82-year-old matriarch. "If he saw a rainbow, one of Matthew's favorite things, he would call me." Her daughter Madeline also remembers the convicted criminal clinging to their family following Matthew's shocking passing at the age of 54. "Kenny even spoke at Matthew's funeral. The person responsible for my brother's death stood up and addressed the people who loved him most," she blasts. "That's like a cruel joke. I still struggle with it. He didn't just take my brother's life. He tainted our final memories of saying goodbye." And sister Caitlin questions whether the star's death was unintentional at all, with the 43-year-old suggesting she will never know if the lethal dose of ketamine was only lethal by accident. Iwamasa, who discovered Matthew's dead body in a hot tub, repeatedly volunteered his version of events without being asked, as if he were being interviewed rather than mourning a friend, adds Madeline. "He was trying to distract us from the truth." There is no denying the facts of the sad case any longer, though. "We trusted a man without a conscience," slams Suzanne, "and my son paid the price." Kyle didn't have to die. Late NASCAR legend Kyle Busch might still be racing today if he'd steered himself straight into a hospital bed, medical experts say. The stock car bad boy, 41, had been battling a severe sinus cold that prompted him to ask for a doctor during a race at Watkins Glen in upstate New York. And just 11 days later, his condition escalated into pneumonia, sepsis infection, and complications that took his life on May 21st. Now medical experts say the tragedy likely could have been prevented if Busch had sought prompt, appropriate medical care. "He should have seen a doctor right away," says New York-based internist Dr. Stuart Fisher. "Sinus issues can develop into something far worse extremely quickly." Dr. Jesse Morse agreed, writing on X, "The proper protocol would have been to have him admitted to the hospital and get IV antibiotics with proper monitoring." Neither Fisher nor Morse counted Busch as a patient. If Busch had undergone a full workup in an ICU after his radio call at Watkins Glen, doctors might have spotted bacteria that a sinus infection can introduce into the bloodstream. That almost always can bring dire implications, Fisher explained. Even if Bush thought he was simply dealing with a sinus issue, a physician could have recognized more serious symptoms of sepsis, according to Fisher. As I was taught, the patient will ultimately let you know what is really wrong. You just need to listen long enough, he says. Further discussion might have identified the issue earlier, and perhaps a life could have been saved. Bush also reportedly used a racing simulator as recently as the day before his death, which may have aggravated his condition, according to one doctor. The physical stress associated with racing simulators, which are designed to mimic the intense G-forces that drivers experience on the track, could potentially aggravate already inflamed lungs during recovery from pneumonia, though direct research on simulator-related effects is limited, Dr. Mark Siegel, who did not treat Bush, told Fox News. Insiders close to Bush say the relentlessly competitive stock car king was on a mission to rehabilitate his checkered reputation on the circuit, where he was known as much for his battles with fellow drivers as his two Cup Series championships. Kyle was regarded as the ultimate outlaw, to the point where many other drivers wouldn't even talk to him, but he embraced it, says one source. Adds another, he was a complicated guy who thrived on the competition and didn't shy away from personal conflicts, but he saw a better, more serene life for himself down the road. Liz in the crosshairs of the Cyrus shootout. Billy Ray Cyrus boycotted daughter Miley's Hollywood Walk of Fame event after she banned his gal pal Elizabeth Hurley, sources tell the National Enquirer. Insiders say the snub has rekindled long-simmering family tensions as the achy-breaky heart singer, 64, is set to propose to the 61-year-old Brit beauty. Miley would have welcomed Billy Ray if he'd been willing to come solo, but he refused, so he skipped it, snitches the insider. It was very sad, but it's indicative of where things are with Miley and her dad. She wants to be a part of his life, but she's also not ready to make Liz part of the family. After her parents divorced in 2023, the former Hannah Montana star, 33, said she had a lot of loyalty to her mom, Tish. Despite that, she posed with her father in a photo upload to Instagram in May 2025 and gave him a shout-out in her speech while receiving a star at her recent Walk of Fame ceremony. But even though Tish is now married to former Prison Break star Dominic Purcell and Billy Ray has been dating Liz for over a year, Miley accepting Liz into the Cyrus clan remains a no-go, sources say. That's just not negotiable because Tish is not comfortable seeing Liz and Billy Ray together, adds the source. Miley is always going to her side with her mom, so until that dynamic is resolved, it's doubtful there will be any huge bond between Miley and Liz. What's more, Liz, who famously dated actor Hugh Grant and has a 24-year-old son, Damien, reportedly won't be welcome at Miley's upcoming wedding to Max Mirando, 27. Miley has nothing against Liz, but it will be Miley's day, and the most important thing for her is protecting her mom, dishes a source. Miley's sister Noah and brother Brayson are much more openly on Billy Ray's side, so it's telling they weren't at the Walk of Fame event either. Billy Ray is not letting this go by without making a major fuss. He says Liz is the woman he plans to marry, and Miley owes her more respect. J-Lo takes a new swing at A-Rod. Diva Jennifer Lopez has zero sympathy for ex-fiancé Alex Rodriguez amid his latest breakup, with sources saying the love-addicted beauty sees it as long-overdue karma after the despicable way he treated her during their engagement. The baller's most recent flame, fitness instructor Jacqueline Cordero, confirmed their split in May, following 3 years of dating. J-Lo says it doesn't surprise her one bit that A-Rod has fumbled another great woman he can never truly commit, snipes the insider. Sources reveal Jenny remained so disgruntled over her own wasted time with the Fox broadcaster that she feels tempted to taunt him by reaching out to his now former girlfriend, 46. Jennifer's joked she should send Jacqueline flowers congratulating her on cutting Alex loose, explains the source. Back in 2021, the Get Right singer kicked the Shark Tank advisor to the curb herself as rumors about his alleged infidelity heated up. Though the pair likely would have been married by then were it not for the pandemic, J-Lo has shared that they postponed two weddings because of the COVID-19 outbreak. He was caught messaging a Bravo reality star months before their split. According to Southern Charm bombshell Madison LaCroix, the retired third baseman was the first to initiate contact more than a year earlier. "He's never physically cheated on his fiancée with me," insisted the gorgeous blonde, adding, "I have tried to be as quiet as possible. I don't want anything bad for his family." Trying to save face, then still betrothed Jennifer, 56, and Alex, 50, released a joint statement about working through some things, but the damage had been done. "It was the last straw," the insider admits. While she never spoke about it publicly, A-Rod shattered her trust so many times. J-Lo just kept believing his excuses until it simply became impossible to. She was left humiliated by Alex. A variety of shared real estate and business investments made the split even messier. Things definitely did not end well, and J-Lo has not moved past her anger over it at all, snitches the source. She continues to hold on to a lot of bitterness. It's my fault. Heartbroken Christine Sons, the birth mother of funny man Martin Short's late adopted daughter Catherine, believes the troubled gal would still be alive today had she been allowed to connect with the child she gave up more than four decades ago, and tragically blames herself for her daughter's suicide. According to a report by the County of Los Angeles Department of Medical Examiner, 42-year-old Catherine Short died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound to her right temple inside her home from a 9mm pistol that was registered in her name. Catherine had a history of depression, mental illness, and a prior suicide attempt in 2017, according to the report. After reading the 15-page report, grieving Christine tells the National Enquirer in an exclusive interview, "It is very devastating for me because obviously I blame myself. She probably had a lot of unanswered questions. I think she would have had peace within herself if those questions had been answered and if she actually knew why I made the decision to give her up." Catherine's body was found on February 23rd after the Concerned Only Murders in the Building actor, 73, called one of her friends to conduct a wellness check after he hadn't heard from his daughter in 24 hours, according to the report. Police found Catherine in bed with a gun in her right hand after breaking through her third-floor bedroom door. "The decedent left multiple sealed envelopes and a note on her dining table," states the report, which mentions other notes and two small urns next to her bed. She had a history of depression and other mental illnesses for many years. Investigators also discovered a cocktail of prescription medications to treat anxiety and depression in the house and in her bloodstream. As the Inquirer previously reported, Christine, then a 17-year-old housekeeper, privately arranged for Catherine's adoption by the comedian and his late wife Nancy Dolman through her employer, actress and screenwriter Renee Taylor. The regretful mom reached out to Catherine in 2006 when her daughter was over 18, but claims the reunion was cut short when a private LA-based security firm was told to tell her to back off, and a squad of goons allegedly began following her 24/7. The firm has denied her story. Fearing for her safety, she lovingly followed her daughter from afar via the internet until her passing. "It was a bad decision, and unfortunately there is nothing I could do about it," the mom says. "I have to live with that knowledge." Adios, Anna. Fake heiress and illegal immigrant Anna Delvey is finally about to be deported. The convicted con artist, 35, whose real name is Anna Sorokin, was found guilty in 2019 of second-degree larceny, attempted grand larceny, and other charges after ripping off numerous supposed friends, banks, and hotels as part of a scheme to live a champagne life on a light beer budget. The so-called Soho scammer was sentenced to 4 to 12 years in prison, but released in February 2021 after serving only 2 years. A month later, she was taken into custody by ICE for violating immigration law. She was released in October 2022, but required to wear an ankle monitor while she appealed her case. The high-maintenance fraudster entered the U.S. on a tourist visa in 2017, but she failed to leave the country when it expired, making her a criminal illegal alien from Germany, according to Homeland Security. For years, she has made a mockery of the United States court system and its immigration laws, a spokesperson said. While she pretended to be a German heiress with a $70 million trust fund, she was actually born in Russia to a middle-class family. Her father was a truck driver, and she only moved to Germany when she was 16. Once Delvey arrived in New York, she quickly began grifting, skipping out on an $11,500 tab at the posh Beekman Hotel and another for $30,000 at the exclusive 11 Howard Hotel in Soho. Later that year, Delvey coerced a friend into putting a $62,000 charge for a vacation at a resort in Marrakesh, Morocco, on the pal's credit card, claiming her card wasn't working. She also never paid her $20,000 tab at Richard Branson's Tony Casbah Tamado Resort in Morocco. Although Netflix paid Delvey $320,000 for the rights to her life story as the basis for the hit docuseries Inventing Anna, the New York Attorney General forced the majority of the money to be used for restitution and fines, which prevents lawbreakers from profiting from their crimes. This has been Renee Freitas Donahue with Dirty Laundry. We'll see you next week.